Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap,
a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Getting close to Christmas time. Get a little Ventures music going there. Best Christmas album ever. Welcome to Ringside Wrap. Rich Tate here. Les Thatcher and Mike Sempervivi back after a week off, shaking off the Thanksgiving dust and hopefully walking off a little bit of the meal. How was your Thanksgiving, guys?
I want you to give a prize to the first person who can call in and tell you the most popular song by the Ventures, other than myself and you.
So anyway,
I mean, really, you won't have to give anything away, is my point.
Oh, anyway. Yeah. Well, you know,
I fail in that one because all I know is the surf music. That was Dick Dale was not in the Ventures, correct?
What? No, he was not. No, Dick Dale was not part of the Ventures.
Dick Dale, no. No, and Dick Dale never fought. Dan Severn either, Mike, so you're all right.
So anyway.
No complaints out of my holidays at all. I wish Auburn would have beat up on Alabama, although I knew that wasn't going to happen. But no complaints. Actually enjoyed a little bit of the quiet, didn't have to travel anywhere or do a whole lot. So it was actually kind of nice to be home with the immediate family for once.
Yeah, it was quiet. That's cool. I mean, it was when you get old, guys, it's just another day in a week. What the hell?
There you go. I'm just always happy because my wife makes this really great casserole out of turkey, and basically I'm making up holidays to get her to make a turkey. you know, we're not Jewish, but I'm begging her for a Hanukkah turkey. So anyway, yeah, Georgia Tech loses the annual beatdown there. God, I'm so miserable to be a Tech fan. But anyway.
Ohio State had to Duke their ass last night in basketball.
Yeah,
they did. I knew Ohio State was pretty good. I didn't know they were that good.
That's the second worst loss in Duke basketball history. I think I forget who it was, but I think it was 58 or 59. Somebody beat them by 25, and State beat them by 22 last night.
All right.
I'm sure all the Dukie fans though are taking their. They're probably shaking that one off, going, oh, that's no big deal. Iowa State's really good, and no matter what, North Carolina already lost to an unranked team. I can hear them right now in Cameron.
And we're talking about everything but wrestling, and, of course, there's a good reason for that.
Yeah, well, that's just it. You know, I don't know, Les, if you got my email. I know Mike did. I got a chance to speak with him right before we went on, but didn't have much time to put a show together tonight. But hell, there's really nothing much to worth talking about. Probably going to go about an hour tonight, but let's make the rounds. Hit WWE first. Monday Night Raw sucked.
it wasn't the worst Monday Night Raw that they've ever had. You know, I'm not sure what was redeeming, but there was something.
What the hell was the whole Piper's Pit thing?
Okay, yeah, that. I think what is easier to decipher and understand would be Jinder Mahal speaking in Indian dialect. they're trying to control how you react to John Cena, and they can't. Which Roddy basically said anyway, but in so many. And you know the other thing is every time I heard Roddy say WWE Universe, I cringed.
Yeah,
I thought, okay, they've scripted him too, for Christ's sake. It's it was a confused. I mean, I know what they were trying to do, but it didn't work. and it made and the those guys started to get uncomfortable in the segment too. I think Roddy did. I'm not sure if John was oblivious to the whole situation. He just smiles and goes on with his life anyway. So I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. You figure Cena had to know Piper just having to be backed into a corner of. You know, because you know he wanted to fly off script. It would have made sense for him to, but it's, you know, they lock him into this stuff. Like, God knows that John Cena and Roddy Piper need, you know, anything written down for him, especially Roddy Piper, for God's sakes. But, we talked about this with, like, WrestleMania leading into last year's WrestleMania, where there's a million and one ways you can still have John Cena fight the good fight for the kids and the women and all that, but they just muddied everything up where, again, I never, ever, 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 ever thought that you should turn John Cena heel. And they probably won't, and that's what they're trying to avoid doing seemingly, or I don't know what they're trying to do, but to me, it's like, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but you know what? I don't know where else you're supposed to go with this leading into WrestleMania, because even if after WrestleMania, say Cena beats The Rock and they got a hearty handshake and they do the fake endorsement of The Rock endorsing John Cena, it doesn't matter. He's still going to get the same response. I mean, I don't want to say damaged goods, but you know, when John Cena was angry after Money in the Bank, I think it was, and he cut a really passionate promo. I can't remember who it was on. I think it was going after Alberto Del Rio. People responded to that in a positive manner because it was John Cena showing some testicular fortitude, to steal that from Mick Foley, because God knows Mick Foley, that's another issue. But you know, it gave him some balls, and it gave him – that's why John Cena was turned face by people anyway. It was the rap gimmick and being the jerk and being that cool guy, but being aggressive – that's what people liked with him. And that's the last time he was cheered was that, and then he got away from that. So unless he gets a true set of cojones, just turn him heel, because I don't see what other use you're going to get out of this.
Well, you know, first of all, he's vanilla. And, you know, you're talking about they want to get over the kids and the women and the guy and you know, and the male demographic that they shoot for. But, you know, Steve Austin got over that same group of people. I mean, there might have been a few Steve Austin haters when he was a top babyface, but damn few. I mean, in this day and age, like Lance Storm said about the idiots in Madison Square Garden that wanted to chant Zack Ryder when Rock was trying to do something heartfelt, it's insulting and ignorant, and they just want to be the show, and they're not, but, you know, they just show their ignorance to do that. But you know, the crazy thing is, why does there, you know, and I keep repeating it myself here, but why does there have to be a heel and a babyface? Why can't two top athletes, you know, and let people decide during the match if there has to be, you know, but does there have to be a, I've seen some great wrestling matches in my time where nobody threw a punch or a kick, they wrestled.
Yep.
And I know I'm not talking about two Jack Briscoes here. You know, neither one of them are technically the greatest performers to walk the face of the earth. But still, people demand so little in this day and age of what goes on in that ring. I can't believe that they can't do that. But, I mean, you know, and why can't it just be an athletic competition, for Christ's sake? Why does there have to be, you know, to me, the fact that Cena is, you know, who he is and where he is in the company at this point in time, and Rock who he is and where he was and where he always is when he shows up, should be enough. I mean, it's like I loathe the idea of Alabama and LSU again, but because I don't think that stupid computer should put two football teams in the same conference in the championship game. But you know, if it happens, it happens. And to me, you know, I want to see who's the winner and don't necessarily like or dislike either one. You know, I mean, it's just they want to manipulate instead of play off of what's there. That's the biggest deal, I think.
Well, Les, I don't want to go too off topic, but it plays into it. Was there ever a place, because obviously there's always pockets no matter where you are, where you know, the fans are going to react a certain way. I know WWE says the bizarro world thing and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, Boston proved it at the Royal Rumble. They like seeing the older guys. You know, they still pop for those guys and things like that. But was there ever anywhere where you worked where it was kind of a collective thing from everybody where it was like, ah, Jesus, here we go. Or a place where they were like a Madison Square Garden, but somewhere like that, not to that level, but where it was just different. You know, it was just different from everywhere else you were working, where they just wanted to see, you know, the bad guys or something like that, or they just went opposite of everywhere else you were.
You found little pockets of fans like that occasionally, but see, I mean, we never tried. We manipulated our personalities, not, you know, and let the people play off of that. And if you were good, I'll tell you a quick story about something like that. And it was in Natchez, Mississippi. I was wrestling a single with Donnie Fargo, Jack Dalton. And there were a group of college kids, I think maybe five or six, sitting ringside. And no matter what we did, they wanted to cheer Jack. And so at one point in the match, he just he jumped out of the ring, got in their faces, and said, "If I hear you cheer for me one more time, I'm going to whip your ass." And got back in the ring. We went on with our match, and we never had any problems with the man after that.
Well, you know, I heard this somewhere this week too, and I think it may have been last week, and I kind of thought about it in relevance to when I was a little kid and first started going to wrestling matches, where I don't want to say the crowd policed itself, but somebody told a story about there would be an old lady with a cane that would, you know, poke you or take a shot at you. And I remember that as a little kid too, where it was, if you were cheering, not a Ric Flair, because Baltimore was a bad example there, but let's just say it was, I don't know, Baron Von Raschke with Paul Jones against,
you know, it's almost like audience, well, or the Impact Zone. Right, it's almost like audience participation, and sadly enough, it's promoted because the wrestlers now more than ever turn to the audience to beg for their forgiveness, their kindness, their you know, to be something, and they want to include them. When I had lunch with Nigel here a few weeks ago, and we were talking about, you know, that one thing, and one of the things he remembered that Steamboat had told him years ago when he was still in my camp was, you don't ask the people. You know, you acknowledge their presence, but you do not ask them. And I thought, Jesus, I wish somebody would write that on the forehead of practically everybody in the business today. But, of course, they don't. That's, you know, but the audience, I mean, that's turned to what wrestling's, you know, it's like the what thing, you know.
Oh God, yeah, it's awful. Yeah, there was a turn, especially in the 90s. Obviously, that's why ECW was able to succeed. But just, you know, the culture got meaner. There was more media. There were people being snarky and things like that. And it's probably impossible to get it back in the bottle. And obviously, you just have to not retrain fans. I guess is the best as you can of going to build logic again and getting things to build. But how do you? I guess there is no way to. There's really nothing you can do. I guess there's nothing to tell you. You know what you can't give the fans everything that they want. But how do you walk the line of manipulation too, where you try to get those people who fly off that kind of back into line for your business and for,
well, you know,
presenting your product.
You know, the product is so much television now and not so much house show any longer. But in a house show situation, or let's say a pay-per-view situation with the house show crowd, you go the opposite direction of where they want you to go. I mean, just on purpose. But see, that's the other part, too, is so many guys in that ring today aren't allowed or are not capable of taking their own direction. What they are doing in there has been laid out for them in the back, and I mean, with the except, you know, the obvious exception of people like, you know, if you go back to your last three WrestleMania main events, the majority of everything there was called in the ring, obviously, and because of the length of the matches, but and because of the people involved. But that's the biggest thing is, you know, we'll hear some internet mark, and I don't know how else nicely to say it, because there is no nice way. You know, one of the experts will be sitting in the back, and somebody's trying to work a hold, and they'll yell boring, and at the moment they yell boring, somebody in that ring will say, "We better get going." Wait a minute, is that the guy paying you back there? Is that the guy running the show? Is that the promoter? Is that the booker? No? Well, then who gives a damn what he thinks? You know, you have to set your pace and keep it the best. You know, Nigel and I, again, going back to that conversation we had at lunch a few weeks ago, a show that was a cyber clash or something that HWA did. It was, you know, that they sold on the internet or something. There was a cage match. It was overbooked with three referee bumps and blood. And then they had these guys in a table, you know, ladders match, which were killing each other. But the match that captured the audience, the match that took them where they wanted it to go with wrestling, was Nigel and Chad Collier. And it was the best match on the show. And the people were into it, you know, because they didn't let the people dictate. And that's the key, more than, I think, than anything else. But, you know, here's the deal, guys. It took time to get to where we're at now, what we're talking about, and it's not going to change overnight. Can it change completely? Probably never. But can it be altered? Absolutely. If you work at it, you know. I think the biggest problem is nobody actually makes that attempt. Or, like I say, a lot of these young guys don't know how.
I'll say, to mumble on about this, but it's something Dave has said a couple of things in the newsletter. New Japan, I think, is the greatest example of that. You have to go back and retool everything from, everything on up and get everything back to being straight and where you want it to again, and all this, especially after Monday night, where the praise all of a sudden being heaped upon, boy, everything is looking great with Dolph Ziggler and Zack Ryder, and I forget some of the other names I saw, and it's just like, well, we said this before with Sheamus, we said this before with Drew McIntyre, and Cody the first time around, and Ted DiBiase, and it's like, it's not that they are lacking athletic young talent who could learn, it's not that, it's just that it's not happening. So I'm not going to do a Dolph Ziggler headstand for Dolph Ziggler until, because there's no point to. Because all of this will be, look at Alberto Del Rio, for heaven's sakes, the entire year, and believe me, if anyone ever saw Dos Cross Jr. or saw him interviewed before his pride fights or shoot fights that he's had, you didn't think he'd be that guy, Alberto Del Rio. Just nothing against him, but he didn't have that, and they had a chance with this guy, and they were going to shove him down people's throats, and where they seemed to be, he was kind of on an upswing there, then they cut his legs out, and now he's back to being old. Vince lost faith in him, and it didn't really work out the way that they wanted it to, so they just drop it. So there's no, I don't see there being any point in getting excited, even though I really, as you guys know, really like Dolph Ziggler. We've seen this routine before, and until everything changes, the structure of kind of everything, I don't see there's a reason to get excited.
Well, they
don't.
Set a pattern.
I don't see that there's too much of a reason to be happy about either Raw, and they didn't see all of Raw, and I haven't seen SmackDown yet. If they were good shows, again,
you don't want to watch SmackDown. Do yourself a favor. If you have taped, if you have DVR'd SmackDown, just erase it and go on with your life.
I can handle that.
I'm going to tell you the most compelling thing on SmackDown, and let me be sure I get all the catchphrases in here, is the anticipation of who Diva Bella will kiss, which superstar in the WWE universe she will kiss, because she won the mistletoe on a pole battle royal. And we can only hope that when she picks that guy to kiss, that then it will trend on Twitter. Now, I want to be sure I got all the catchphrases in. I didn't want to leave anything out.
Before
we get into that, this is driving me crazy. This Zack Ryder thing is driving me friggin' up the wall. I listen to people take 15 minutes lamenting why Zack Ryder is not on top, why Zack Ryder is not a champ, why he's not getting a title match. Here's the friggin' deal, okay? This is not up for debate. This is the facts of life, okay? Zack Ryder is a goofy gimmick. Zack Ryder is a person I don't know. He's got a good look. He looks like an athlete. Looks like he's a pretty decent worker. This industry has established that goofy gimmicks belong in the lower to mid card. Okay? Now, somebody's going to say, people are really behind Zack Ryder. Yes, they are. But he will never draw you 50 cents on top at a pay-per-view in a main event. What he is the underdog, and that's exactly where he belongs. And if you were to put a belt on him, it's like, then there's no reason for all you people to get behind him and all this man love for Zack Ryder. Yes, he sells merchandise. But, I mean, I almost regurgitate with that crap. After Del Rio beat him after the Monday night after Survivor Series on all these recap shows, people were wasting all this. Oh, my God. Listen, that was the smartest thing they probably did on that, except for Punk using the words professional wrestling and you are fans and not a universe. That was probably the best thing on that show. Why? Because Del Rio is damaged goods to begin with. You're not going to recapture everything with him to start with. There's just no way. You've given him a title twice for a total of 35 minutes, and then it's been meaningless. But anyway, my point is, if I were the booker, and I'm saying, okay, Del Rio just put the belt back on Punk, how do we get a little steam back on him tomorrow night? Okay, we have to have him glom somebody. Who would he glom? Well, how about this guy, Zack Ryder, who all these people are so far behind, he'll get more heat by beating him than he'll get by beating somebody else. So it was the smartest thing to do, and that's who Ryder is, and that's his value to this company, not as a champion, but as an underdog. End of my rant.
Woo-woo-woo.
Yeah, you put
and
him on.
Woo-woo to you with a F in front of the woos, okay?
Is he a guy that you, because like Santino, I think it was last Raw or two Raws ago, Santino was out. I thought they used him great because he was out. He had a shirt on. He was goofy, and he died in like 30 seconds. Fantastic. That's great. I always loved getting behind a colorful guy. I always liked colorful preliminary guys, as long as they were preliminary guys, if I thought of them that way. Zack Ryder, with the popularity that he sold the hump or... Because where are you right now with this, as far as you look at it, as far as this weird thing going on where you do want to kind of just, you know, take the popularity he does have now and utilize it to its fullest, but at the same time...
Yeah, he can beat some of these undercard guys, yeah, instead of, some of these guys that they've had on NXT and stuff. You know, that they want to use on it. Yes, he can get a win over them, but he shouldn't beat anybody of climb the mountain.
I don't think anybody remembers.
And you've got
the
a champion.
Rocky,
you've got
Rocky
a champion who's got no teeth. Basically, you got a champion who's got no teeth.
Well, none of them do, and none of them will. I take that back. Mark Henry does, but you know, none of these other guys. How? Why? Like, there's the people who are just shocked over why people would like Mark Henry. It's like, I'm sorry, a big, scary guy is a timeless thing. You know, the company was built on giants anyway. You can tell stories with a big, giant guy where you look for a weakness in him and things like that. But, you know, and I'll take a Mark Henry over a John Cena reign, over another Alberto reign, after a Dolph Ziggler reign, which will come way too early and then be dropped like all the other ones. I mean, outside of Punk, I mean, I don't know. They don't have anybody I can actually see holding a world championship. And I'm not saying Mark Henry would be my most ideal choice, but he's the one, as to me, as a professional wrestling fan, that makes the most sense.
Well, it's because he's serious about what he's doing. I mean, he's, you know, if there's any comedy to what Mark does, it's because you find it funny, not because he tries to make it funny. I mean, he's deadly serious about, you know, about where he's going and what he wants to do. And that's part of it, too. I was talking to somebody about this. I said, you know, look at it. Here is the problem with our business, okay? Some guy in UFC wins a fight and he jumps up on top of the cage and plays with himself or, you know, throws his fist up in the air, pounds his chest. Okay, that's cool. The we know that's real, and the fight's over anyway. Some guy makes a touchdown in the NFL next this Sunday, and he does some goofy gyrations, you know, in the end zone. But it's not during the game; it's after it's over, and we know that's real. Or the defensive lineman who gets the sack and comes up, you know, pounding his chest, whatever. You know, you get my point here, okay? Now everyone knows we're not real, and we should be going the other direction to try to make them think that maybe possibly something here is real. But instead, we get goofier than we are than we're considered to begin with. Does that make sense to you guys, what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's all right for something that is real to have put a little fun, you know, a little posturing, a little clown act.
Very pretty, very talented judo bronze medalist in the Olympics. I mean, very young, but on a Strikeforce show, she basically created a gimmick that she didn't, you know, had no intention on doing it. She has had 7 fights now, 4 professional, 3 amateur. She has won them all by armbar. She has won them all by in under a minute, which, you know, so it started this almost this organic thing of like she's got a gimmick. She beats people with an armbar in under a minute. She has Judo Jean LaBelle, God bless him, standing there in a pink shirt with a stopwatch. That's and yes, they added some sizzle to the steak of her being able to take people's arms home and then added the sizzle around it. Just, it happened. It's organic. They've taken advantage of it. And that's like all of sports where it's amazing the lack of fingers on pulses in pro wrestling where it's like all you have to do is sit there, present the...
They've made you know that the Muay Thai kicks in UFC are just bullshit in the wrestling business, haven't they? I said, yes, they have.
Yeah. Kick pads.
Right?
Boy. Yeah,
right?
They were cool the first time I saw them in Japan. But I tell you, yeah, the popping of pads and like the fact it doesn't mean anything. I mean, my God, Samoa Joe and Nigel and Danielson and, you know, Kobashi obviously wrestled a couple of those guys when he was there. They made it look like it hurt because it hurt. And sport, or, I mean, it just, that drives me nuts more than anything. I mean, you just don't walk through Muay Thai kicks and things like that or trade them back and forth. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, when a guy is sitting on his knees in the middle of the ring and this other guy comes off the ropes and throws that one kick that just takes him, you know, puts him back, and then he comes bouncing up and does 2 high spots. You know, when you've seen that one kick in the UFC cage, that's ended the match. You know,
yeah.
It's just, and it, you know, the point is, it's what the artist, and I will include myself in this business, teach. Less is more. The right thing at the right time has more impact than all that, you know, stuff put together. You know, it's like what would I have seen better out of O'Reilly and Richards? What I would have seen better is you're telling me they're both in the same camp, so why wouldn't they have felt each other? I mean, I sit sometimes and think, my God, am I the only sane person, you know, that watches this, you know, that thinks about these things? Real quick, and it's not an endorsement or anything, but Kayfabe Commentaries has got another new guest booker thing out with Terry Taylor. And a couple quick things. It's good. And any independent guys listening to this, whether you're a wrestler, a booker, a promoter, or if you're intending to be any of the above, get the 2 Kevin Sullivans, the Jerry Jarrett, the Gary Hart, the J.J. Dillon, and this Terry Taylor, and watch them over and over and over and over and listen to them and pay attention, not just watch them for entertainment value. But one of the things, a couple things on what Terry, on the back cover of this, you know, the case that the DVD, the CD comes in, is Terry holding a blackboard. It says, think, shoot, but work. And that's what they're not doing. You know, they're just working, you know, and they don't think of it as a shoot as such. And another telling thing that he mentioned that when he was first starting trying to be assistant booker with Kevin in Atlanta, And he came to, you know, one of the things that Kevin told him, he said, if you book a match and you can't book the finish and you can't book the return, then don't book the match. And that's another thing they just throw, meaning that they just throw warm bodies in there with no idea of where that's going to go, or will it go anyplace, or are they even compatible?
Hornswoggle winning a battle royal on SmackDown.
There you go.
Let's switch gears just a little bit. Mike, give us a little rundown MMA boxing stuff real quick, and then I want to have Les blow up TNA.
No problem. Miguel Cotto and Antonio Margarito is coming up this weekend, I think. It's a rematch,
yep.
Very controversial rematch. Basically what happened in their first fight, Miguel Cotto was, I don't want to say dominating, but was very much winning the fight. Throughout the first 6-7 rounds against Margarito a few years ago, they fought at 147 pounds. Margarito, Cotto was landing, and he hits hard, and Cotto was really looking rough. I mean, Margarito was landing, you know, but nothing where it made it look like Cotto's face should be that banged up, and Cotto started to lose steam throughout the rest of the fight and ended up getting knocked out. What was found out afterwards was that Antonio Margarito's gloves were tampered with by his trainer, to his knowledge. This is controversial, and that Antonio Margarito should have been gone forever. The trainer, and I want to say it's Nacho Berenstain, I forget who the trainer's name is, has been banished from the States for the most part, but Margarito has been allowed to fight in Texas. Bob Arum has gone to bat for him. It's, to me, it's a crappy situation, because, again, Cotto could have died. I mean, and that's, you could die anyway in the most fairest of fights, for God's sakes, but you know, they're building it off that grudge. They've done a good job on HBO's 24/7. To me, it's an unfortunate fight. To me, it's a fight, if, you know, no matter how good it may be, I couldn't endorse spending any money on it, because I don't endorse what Antonio Margarito did. It's a horrific thing to do, and a really disgusting, typical boxing thing to do. And it shows where boxing is on the scale, that this is really not even getting a blip of mainstream sports attention outside of, well, there's a fight coming up. In MMA, it's too long to go on about all the UFC shows that are going on and everything. One thing I didn't say, I don't think the last time we were on, Shane Carwin's having another back surgery, which is, it could end his career at this point. He's 35 years old, and it's going to be his second back surgery. So, you know, Kane's banged up. Rock is going to be coming back. But, you know, the diverticulitis, he's had two attacks on it already. Junior Dos Santos is their champion, but they are in... They could be looking at a long year as far as heavyweights go if there happens to be any more injuries that take place. And then really the biggest story, I think, is Chris Leben, who did not look good in his fight against Martin Munoz at UFC 138 in England. This was the one that aired on Spike TV. Just looked sluggish, didn't look right, you know, just wasn't happening. Well, word comes out that he tests positive, and the UFC did this testing because they were overseas and they didn't have to be tested. They tested the main eventers. Leben had oxycodone and pardon me, I don't know what the other one, oxymorphone or something like that, another oxy, you know, type of product in his system, to which Brian and Dave both said this is, you know, that should have been out of his system in 2 to 3 days, which is very, very, very telling for a guy who's had drug and alcohol issues that are very much well noted throughout his career. But sad situation. UFC suspended him a year. I have a feeling that it's the MMA's first Daryl Strawberry type situation. There's a lot of guys, you know, Mark Kerr, the Smashing Machine movie that came out about 10 years ago or so. It's not like, you know, painkillers and these issues. It's not like it's just happening in MMA or anything like that. But I think Chris Leben may end up being a real face for, now that MMA has grown to the point that it has, it's going to be interesting to see how they take care of him, how he takes care of himself, and where his career goes, because he's a guy the UFC doesn't want to cut. He's a guy you kind of want to root for, because, I don't know, I don't root for people that die from drugs, but it's...
It rings. Dixie Carter's on the other line. Says, come on down, I'll pay you a boatload. What do you do?
Wow, you start... Start over, I guess. You know, I think the brand is so tarnished in terms of fans and the industry itself, I don't know what you can do, honestly. First of all, Paul Heyman made a statement. You can have, you know, if you have 20 icons or 20 legends or whatever the hell you want to call them, you know, you can't, you know, you've just got a crowd. And his point is, and like I said too, if you're trying to find a number one contender, you don't have a battle royal. You don't put a five-way to get a number one contender. If you're looking for a number one contender, you put two guys in the ring, you spotlight them, and one of them comes out as the top guy, and that, you know, and if the match is put together properly, you're announced. You know, Bischoff's son is not. I mean, that. I mean, the whole thing there is just it becomes such a farce. You've almost got a clean house. You've got to back things off, and you're going to have. And you know, I'd have to say to her or to her brothers or whoever, you know, the people that pull the purse strings, basically what George Scott said, you know, back in the early 70s to Jimmy Crockett Jr., to Francis and Jackie and David, you know, I'm going to basically kill this thing and have spilled this over, because he, you know, he was going to take it out of the hands of the tag teams and turn it into a single promotion. And I was there when that happened, and it did. I mean, business fell off. If they're business, I don't know how much far their business can fall, quite frankly. But you know, but that's the whole thing. To rebuild it, you know, you've got to back off. You've got to, you can't continue to do what you're doing and make changes. You know, and so that would be part of it. I think you know, there are guys there who are good people, who are good solid worker, who want to make a difference. But they have been, they're damaged goods, you know, and you've got to decide, and just ask me right off the top of my head who those people will be. I don't know. You know, I think they've damaged Bobby Roode. You know, they did such a magnificent job to build him up as a strong babyface into this title thing, and then to turn him heel was just pure waste. I know some people say, well, he's more comfortable. It doesn't matter. I mean, the point is you had the people in the palm of his hand. And
they left money on the table.
Yes, absolutely.
And I don't want to interfere, but what you had said earlier on about you have, when you were talking about, you know, going back and forth, two guys who know each other, you had two guys that the people really cared about. You had something that, two guys who weren't damaged goods at that point that you continued on for a while, and then they went in the direction that they did. You know, there was, a perfect example of, you could have had them going rocking back and forth. There was no need to turn anybody heel for quite some time until the fans dictated it or until it was time. But, boy, they lost a lot of money to me. And I'm sorry for interrupting, but I think that was perfect for what you had said earlier.
Yeah. No, you're right. There was no reason. It's just like I'm interested to see what Jimmy does with Richards and Eddie, you know, in the final battle in New York for Ring of Honor, because, you know, Davey's kind of taken exception because Eddie's training with Severin, and although with Davey's background, I see the value, you know, but I'm just hoping they're not going to turn one of these guys, because there's no reason. I mean, there's reason to, you know, it's you have heat between brothers. But doesn't necessarily mean somebody's got to be a heel, you know. I think there's a competitive things within blood, you know. I mean, families. I'm an only child, so. But I, you know, I've seen it with, you know, with friends who have brothers, and there's a competitive thing there, you know. But it doesn't have to be heel. But then you know, again, it's a whole package, and I think with TNA, it's the rebuilding. You've got to move a lot of people out of there, and I don't know who you replace. I mean, you've got to bring in some fresh faces and build. You can't be in a rush. You know, they killed Joe and Angle. They killed Nigel and Angle with the big rush job. AJ has matured as a performer, but he's been heel babyface, dumb hillbilly, you know, the new Playboy version of Ric Flair. He's been so many things, and as I've said here before, or any place else I've talked about this, each time you switch somebody like that, you chip away at their value to you in terms of buy rates or even house shows. So, you know, it's a tough, that's a tough job. I mean, you know, and I would say you're looking at, to make a dent, Rich, you're looking at 18 months or better to see any benefit. And you can't be sure you're doing it. You know, I mean, it's trial and error. There's no geniuses. You know, it's throwing enough against the wall to see what's going to stick. But you've got to set a path, and you've got to go in that path. And one person has got to make the final call. And that's the problem down there. That's a political minefield, for Christ's sake. You know, I don't give a damn if Garrett has caught the fire or whatever the hell Hogan said in his tweet. He's still Bischoff's kid. He can't slap his ass with both hands. He's not a wrestler, and he's got no business being on top. If he were my kid, I'd say the same thing. I mean, it's just it hurts the locker room, and with any fans who actually follow the sport, you've struck a negative to begin with, you know. So I don't know the answer. I mean, God, I wish I could give you the answer. You know, if she called and offered me a huge amount of money, I need the money. I'd have to take it. The first thing I'd probably do is build me a house into a cave on a mountain somewhere so I could go hide there after I'd failed, you know, miserably. I think the brand is so tarnished and has got such a negativity to it, I'm not sure, you know, what... you know, what can be done, or if anything, at this point in time, really.
Well, you know, they do have one thing, as bizarre as this is going to sound, going for them, if you wanted to do that, because they always seem to get the same fan base, no matter what tuning in. It's always that one rating, or around 1.1, 1.2, whatever it is. It always hovers around there. And it's been noted that their house show business has dropped off, their merchandise has dropped off, things like that. They seem to be very comfortable. I mean, Bellator is not coming till 2013, and it doesn't look like it's really going to impact TNA whatsoever. TNA is still going to be, you know, working there. Obviously, there will be more emphasis on Bellator, but they're in a position where, realistically, because of the network they're on and because they have a base that doesn't seem to go anywhere no matter what, you could actually do that and actually be able to see legitimate results. But how do you sell that if it's you? How do you sell that to a network? Because obviously the Crocketts knew the Scotts and knew, you know, and obviously it's still a hell of a leap of faith to put your business in somebody's hands who says, look, I got to grind this thing down to the nubs before it grows back up again. But how would you sell that to the network when you're up there going, if they even ask that sort of question, how do you sell them on, look, you know, do you want to talk? Because I guess the first thing they would say is, well, we like that one. We're consistent with that one. It's one of the best things on our network. You want to change this? I mean, how do you respond to
well,
something?
You try to make them understand that if you want to stand out, then you can't be a bad copy of everybody else. And if there's a chance to bring their ratings up, to bring your buy rates up, et cetera, then you've got to try to be different. You know, it's like I said here a couple weeks ago, it's not that I'm adverse to the Young Bucks and the Bravado brothers being on a house show for ROH. If I were, you know, calling the shots, I wouldn't put them on the TV, because if I'm advertising change or different, they aren't, you know. And what TNA is, or Impact or whatever the hell you want to call it, is putting out there isn't to a great degree either, you know. You'll see, you know, well, it's if you stop and look back over this year, the Punk thing in WWE and the Bobby Roode thing both had different endings, and both, but they both, you know, gave everybody so much hope, and then that was dashed on the rocks, for Christ's sake. But I think, you know, and you've got, I think the network's also got to, if we're partners in this network, then you got to realize, we want you to have ratings. We want to improve your ratings. We don't want to. We're not anxious to damage this relationship. But on the same hand, we have to sell merchandise, and we have to try to bring our buy rate up on our pay-per-views, which we are not able to do by just giving everything, you know, the store away every week on television. And you've got to hope that somebody there is going to make, you know, going to understand that. You know, unless the network, you know, hell, we can, you know, do nude wrestling if you guys are paying enough for it, right? But we can't sell that in major coliseums anywhere. That's the whole problem with that.
Speaking of which, Thursday night on Impact, knockouts and bikinis washing cars.
Stop it. Oh, God.
Oh yeah.
Well, how about I thought,
well, you know, that whole Karen Jarrett thing is, listen, you know, see, and that's the thing too, the evil promoter, the evil general manager, the evil whatever, she, you know, whatever, she's the head of the Knockouts, so she's the evil, you know, it's been done to friggin' death, and she is so obnoxious with it, it's like, why are you people working here? I mean, why, you know, and then the goofy thing they did with that thing on, well, you know, I tried to dress you up and cover you up, but they don't want that, so now I want you all to put on your best lingerie. Well, I happen to carry mine in my wrestling bag all the time, and you know.
Get your lingerie? And,
yeah, of course. And then Tessmacher, who was in the Hooters beauty contest, and how many of these girls straddle that middle rope and make love to it before they get in the ring anyway, all of a sudden they're offended that you would want me to show my body? Wait a minute, you just showed it last week and the week before that, you know, but I can't do it now. You know, I mean, it's just, that, see, there's part of the problem. It's just, it's like a knee-jerk reaction of the people writing this stuff or making these decisions. Is like, you know, I was talking elsewhere, you know, back in the territory days, Thanksgiving, like Christmas, was a big business day for us. Big business. Now it's which goofy character is going to wear the stupid turkey suit, for Christ's sake. I mean,
oh, God.
Who cares?
You know, I got to tell you, man, as a fan, I wish Dixie Carter would call you. Because God, I'd love to see something change, and as a friend, I'd love for her to call you, because as long as she'd match my salary, I'd carry your bags. So anyway, that's probably going to do it for us this week. I was going to try to hit some old school stuff, but I do need to wrap up on my end. So let's go ahead and get some plugs in. Les, what do you got going on?
Well, Mike Johnson and I did Wrestler's Eye Radio today on Insider, and of course this weekend we'll be on Mike Sempervisi's website, which is the Observer Figure Four with Vic Socia and Will Strauss. Well, you know, I do want to mention real quick an update on my buddy Doc. He is at home. He's able to stand for like 10 minutes at a time. He's able to shower. He's still being fed nutritious stuff through the port, but he's able to use a straw to drink some soup or water, some juice, stuff like that. And which all this doesn't sound too exciting to most people, but it's a hell of a progress for him. And he is at home at the end of these guys' match with the ROH champion. They had a bunch of kids run in to beat them both up, and it was pretty low rent. Anyway, so. But anyway, I'm available to teach things that are right, and you can reach Les at epwt.com.
All right, Mike, what's up?
I don't think I've ever actually heard commentary being done over a house. That sounds awful, but
it's Bush. It is Bush League, Mike. Take my word for it. It is Bush League.
Well. You have my big audio nightmare. We're recording that sucker soon. Now, I do want to say this. I want to pass one of my condolences. I don't really want to talk about this too much because it just happened right before Thanksgiving. It really bummed me out because he was always really, really good to me. Bison Smith, Mark Bison Smith, passed away, as almost everybody knows now, in Puerto Rico, getting back from Japan, working for NOAA. So I just want to pass along my condolences to all of his friends and family. And he was very, very, what a sweetheart of a human being. Anything you heard nice about Bison, you know, at least to me, what I can say is it's a lie. He was nicer and he was very sweet and very helpful to me. So I just want to pass along my condolences there. And I don't know how much I'll talk about with Adam. I'm sure we're going to have to, although I really don't want to, but The Unlinked Big Audio Nightmare, we get a chance to record that again. It may not even be until next week, but Brian Alvarez and I should be back with a timely show, since the last couple have been evergreen-style shows of Best of 2011 kind of thing we did last week. We should be back to talk more topical things coming up this Sunday from 6 to 8. Just go to WrestlingObserver.com to find out that information.
All right, and of course, you can find out all the latest about wrestling, pro wrestling, or MMA, and some boxing here and there, so usually the bigger bouts, at ringsiderap.com. You can find out everything about Georgia wrestling history or stuff going on today at georgiawrestlinghistory.com. And let's see, tomorrow night on Peach State Pandemonium here on the GWH Radio Network, Mike Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons return after a two-week holiday layoff. And they'll be joined by returning guests, Bill Bowman and Joe Turner. Always good to hear from those guys. And let's see. Believe that's it for this week then. Guys, any last thoughts?
That should
do
it.
Oh, I do want to get this in there. Congratulations to Jen Holbrook and Matt Sells getting engaged.
Awesome. Congratulations. Great, God, great voice. She needs to do voiceovers for Wrestling Observer, too.
Absolutely sweet voice. Any last thoughts? Les, you started to say something?
I was just going to say it's, you know, we'll check in with you next week.
All right. We'll see you later.
We thank you for listening to the Tripod, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.